So, first of all, I apologize for being late for various reasons. Today, we're going to, because last weekend, last Sunday was Ram Navami, but today Bharata Krishna asked me to speak about Lord Ram. Now, the first thing we have to remember is that, of course, that Ram is one of Krishna's manifestations, as Jayadeva Goswami writes in his Dash Avatar Sutra, Vitarasi Dikshu Rane Dikpati Kamaniyam Dasha Mukamoli Balim Ramaniyam Keshavadrita Rama Sharira Jaya Jagadish Hare. O Keshava, O Lord of the Universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of Ramachandra, all glories to you. In the battle of Lanka, you destroyed the ten-headed demon, Ravana, and distributed his heads as delightful offerings to the presiding deities of the ten directions, a feat long desired by them all, whom that monster had much harassed. So the Ram is not different from Krishna. It's a manifestation. It is Keshava who is doing all of these pastimes that we see. So that's an important thing. Now the thing about the Ramayana, that in India, the two most important literatures which have, you could say, preserved Vedic culture, it's not like the Vedanta Sutra. It's not going to be Mimamsa or Nyaya. It's going to be the Mahabharata and Ramayana. These are the two main texts which have preserved Vedic culture. I mean, there are the Puranas also, like the Bhagavatam, but these two are the main. You know, I remember many years ago when the Mahabharata or the Ramayana first came on television, everything stopped. I mean, everything came to a halt. Nothing happened. Muslims went and watched. Everybody was watching. Today it's just as popular as it was forever. It's always popular. Because it preserves in the histories, in the activities, all of the teachings of the Vedas are enacted by example. Okay. Toward the beginning of the Mahabharata, there's one shloka where it describes that the Vedas are afraid of those persons who approach it without going through the Itihasa, without going through the Puranas. They just try to take it apart. You know, you can't understand it unless you go through the Ramayana. And the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, these are meant for everybody. For everybody. For Shudras, for women, for Dvija Bandhus. Anybody can read these. Whereas in something like Vedanta Sutra, this is very highly esoteric. You know, dealing with the esoteric meaning of the Upanishads, and the Aranyakas, and it's the Nyaya Prashtana of the Vedas. So not for everybody. Whereas the Ramayana, Mahabharata, this is for everyone. And it preserves everything. Now, Valmiki, not too much is known about Valmiki. The author, we don't know very much about him. The story that goes is that he was a dacoit. And he liked to rob and kill people. That was his 9-to-5 job. He would, I'm going out to kill. I'll be back for lunch. I'm gonna go rob somebody, I'll be back for lunch. I want 4 chapatis then. So one day, the Sapta Rishis were walking through the forest and he was going to rob them. But before he could pillage them, they asked him one question. They said, you're going to get very heavy karma for doing this. You know, we're Brahmins, we're Rishis, to try to rob us and what those people kill us. And you're doing this for what reason? You're doing this to support your family. You know, that they will get a share of the wealth. You go ask them if they are willing to get a share of the sinful reaction for what you're doing. Because you'll go to hell for untold crores of Brahmandas for what you're doing. And he said, no, they, definitely they will, this that they accept everything, they'll also take a share. And they said, no, you go ask them. You go personally ask them. So Valmiki was, you know, he was certain that just as they would accept all the good parts, they'd also accept all the bad parts. So he went and asked his wife, and she said, no. No, I'm not going to accept. Because actually, according to Dharma, according to Manu, the wife only gets, the wife, it's not an even deal. The wife gets half of the husband's punya, whereas the husband gets half of the wife's papa. It's not exactly even. It is even, half. But it's not the same. So that's why. So they both get half, but it's the... So the wife gets half of the punya of the husband, and the husband gets half the papa of the wife. That's why the husband has to be very careful in controlling his wife, because if she does something wrong, he also bears responsibility. Not just her. She also has responsibility, but he has responsibility. So he went and spoke to his wife, and she said, no, you know, it says in Bhagavad Gita that if you do your duty, you know, in 1847 of Gita, that if a person does their duty, then there is no sinful reaction. So I'm your wife, I'm doing my duty to you, there's no sinful reaction, and plus I get half of whatever punya you might have, if you have any, I get half of that. So I don't want to get your pot. No. So he was devastated. He was completely devastated. All and killed so many people and robbed so many people from my wife and my children, and they don't want to take any of the responsibility. It was a big shock to him. He loved these people. He thought that, you know, everything was, you know, one for all and all for one. And then he found out that that's not the case. So he just left everything. And he was morose, and he came and he asked Narada Muni, like, what should I do? So he said, you just chant this mantra, Ram. If you chant this mantra, Ram, keep chanting it, then you will get free from all these reactions, you will attain beatitude, etc. And Valmiki said, actually his name wasn't Valmiki at that time, with his previous name, whatever it was, he said, well, my whole life has just been killing people. I don't know, I can't say this name. So then Narada said, you just chant the name Mara, death. So Mara, 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 Rama. Turns into Rama. So then he was meditating like this, he was just sitting there chanting the name Rama, from Mara came Rama. And he was sitting there and chanting, and the whole anthill built up over him, a large anthill, Valmiki. So then when the Sapta Rishis came again, 60,000 years later, they came to the spot, and then he burst out of the anthill, as now he was actually called Valmiki Rishi. And he was a great sadhu, a great Rishi. So one day, Narada Muni came to him, now that he was a Rishi, and he wanted him he wanted him to write the Ramayana, which has not even, because Rama had not even appeared yet, but he should write the Ramayana. He gave to him the synopsis, he gave him the complete synopsis of the Ramayana in just a few minutes. You know, he gave him the whole synopsis. And this is your job. You write out in detail. It's like the Srimad Bhagavatam is based upon the Chatur Shloki of the second chapter. There's four shlokas, of which the rest of the Bhagavatam is an expansion of. So based upon what Narada Muni had told him, he was expected to give us the rest of the Ramayana. Because using his Divya Drishti, he would see into the future, etc., what would happen. So then he was thinking about this. He went to the river. He took a bath. And as he was coming back, he saw a pair of crunches, cranes. They were in intimate sexual union. And a hunter came and shot him. Killed the male bird. The male bird was writhing. And this way, this was also a hint of what the Ramayana was about. How the two lovers are separated. So in a fit of he was just so angry at the hunter that he out of his mouth came the shloka. Ma nishada patishtam tvam agama samaha yakroncha mituna deka mavadhihi kama mohitam. Which means, may you not have peace of mind for endless years, O fowler, since you have killed one of a pair of cranes infatuated with passion. So then after he was like amazed, out of his mouth came what is now known as a shloka. Before then, at that time, there was no shloka. We shouldn't say before then, in one sense, because it's always invaded history. Everything comes in a cycle. So before then, in that Manvantara, or in that yuga, there was no slokas. Maybe it's about, you'll see what I mean later on. The things go in cycles. So up to that time, in his situation, there was no slokas. And so he said, from this shloka, from now on, shall be considered actual poetry. Anything else is not. He made the standard, because he was inspired from the Paramatma on what real poetry was. Now, so we have to discuss a little bit about what does the Ramayana teach us. Now, ultimately, because I said the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, they are the two main literature which has kept Vedic culture, Indian culture, cohesive. You know, because of following and listening to the Ramayana, we learn so many things. Of course, the main thing which we learn is devotion to God. Hanuman is the Adi Bhakta, the original devotee, you could say. But the Ramayana teaches so many other things. Specifically for social cohesion, how people should behave with each other, how a husband should deal with his wife, how a father should deal with his son, how a son should deal with his father, how older brothers should deal with younger brothers, and vice versa. You know, how to treat your friends and enemies, how even to deal with dead enemies. So of course, Ram, with his father, he was completely, totally obedient to him. His father was as good as God. Whatever instruction his father gave him, that was it. No question. Even his father didn't want to give. Ram was in the order to go to the forest. Ram did not even flinch. He did not feel bad. He was not angry. He was not jealous. He was not bitter. He didn't say, well, he's my father, I'll do it even though I don't want to. No. His father wanted it, that's good enough for him. If it's going to make his father happy, that's what I'll do. There's no second thought. That's the perfect son. Right? And then
how the brothers should behave. So there was four brothers, Ram, Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna. So the three younger brothers treated Ram, again, as good as God, because he was older. So how much older was Ram than Bharat, that he had so much respect? How much older was he, like 10 years old? You're old, you think of your older brother. And you have so much respect for your older brother or your older cousin. So much respect. Because of the age difference, automatically, you see somebody older and they get that gray hair or something, you automatically feel so much respect for them. Ram was only one day older than Bharat. Just one day. And Lakshman and Shatrughna, they were 2 days younger than, because Ram was born during before Kushya. Punarvasu. So Ram was born in Punarvasu, fourth Pada. Bharat was born in Kushya, and Shatrughna and Lakshman were born in Ashlesha. So just in consecutive days. But they had all awe and reverence, whatever Ram's word was law. Whatever he, even the most unpleasant tasks, they would do simply because Ram ordered it. When Bharat wanted to kill his mother, Kaikeyi and Mantara, because of how they exiled Ram, he didn't kill Kaikeyi, but because he thought Ram would be angry for killing my mother, so he didn't do it. And Lakshman, he didn't like, he had many unpleasant tasks that Ram made him do, including exiling Sita. But he didn't like it so much that in the next time he became the older brother. He didn't like being the younger brother. So instead of being Ramanuja, he became, next time, Achyutaraja. He became the older brother so that he could give the orders, not have to take the orders. And because we see that definitely not always the case. For example, if you take the life of Aurangzeb, he killed all his brothers. He put his father in jail. That's definitely not what the word. He did not read the Ramayana. He read the Quran. He did not read the Ramayana. If he had read the Ramayana, he would have known that you don't kill your brothers, and especially your older brothers, you don't put your father in jail. He should have read that. Or even if you that was pretty bad with Aurangzeb. But if you read like the history of the Ottoman Empire in modern-day Turkey, the Sultan would have many wives, he had many children. He had maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 sons. So what would happen? After the Sultan died, then the oldest son would become the new Sultan. And the first thing he did, he had all his brothers executed. What is that? And you went to school with these little people. You went to school with them, they're your brothers. And you kill them all. What kind of heart do you have to murder all your, you grew up with them? Maybe you had a different mother. But they would just execute all their brothers and all their uncles also. Anybody who might pose a threat to their power, they would execute. This by strangulation. They just strangled them all. So as soon as you found that your father was dead, you knew that if you weren't the oldest son, that means you knew you were next, and you were finished. Now, in regards to the way the husband and wife dealt with each other, there was always sweet speech between the two. Between the brothers also, but between Ram and Lakshman, and Ram and Sita, there was always very charming and pleasant speech with each other. For example, there's one passage, scenario scene that I always remember. That's after Ram goes to Dandakaroni. He goes and he visits Agastya Rishi. And Agastya Rishi says to Ram, he says, you should go to Dandakaranya. There are a lot of rakshasas there. You should kill them all. So Ram said, good, let's go. So on the way there, Sita said, in a very humble, she was very humble, he said, my dear husband, I'm a woman, I'm not so intelligent, like that. She was speaking in a very self-effacing way. But we never met these rakshasas before. They never did anything to us. Why are we going to kill them? What harm did they ever do to us? And we're going over there to kill them. So what did Ram do? Did he say, stupid woman? What are you talking about? Did he speak like that? No. He said, thank you. You're my well-wisher. You're asking this question and thinking of my benefit. He didn't automatically say, oh, you stupid woman. He didn't say that. He had a nice conversation with her. Well, actually, the reason, and he gave a whole explanation of what rakshasas do, because she grew up in a palace. When Sita was prepared to be exiled, that was the first time she had been seen in public by anybody. She had never seen in public anybody. And she was trying to, Valmiki explains, that when she had to give away all of her beautiful saris, which she gave away to the wives of the Brahmins, all the beautiful saris. And then she was trying to figure out how to put bark on, instead of putting bark for clothes, and all these very primitive, crude things. So she was putting it upside down and sideways. So she didn't have any experience, living in the forest, so to speak, of who lived in the forest. So Ram had explained to her that the rakshasas kill first, ask questions later. But he realized that she wasn't. Then she understood, and then everything was they were happy because she asked in a very humble way, and he also responded in a very affectionate manner. And if the wife deals that way with the husband, but even if the husband is a little rough, if he's angry, but if the wife continues to speak softly, then the husband gets the idea that then he also begins to respond softly. But if the wife, then don't expect your husband to respond in a nice way. If you are people reflect the way people act with them. If somebody's very crude to you, then there's a tendency, unless you can self-control, you'll tend to react in the same way. So because both Sita and Ram were very self-controlled, they behaved in a very nice way. That's for us to learn that. Well, somebody might say, well, that's because they're lacking in the mind, Well, if they're not examples to follow, who should we follow? Lady Gaga? That should be an example. Madonna? These are not the people who we should follow. Exemplary people. That should be a thing that we may not exactly be able to do it. Still, by our attempt, we get perfection. But by following mundane personalities, some Bollywood star or some Hollywood star is not going to get us anywhere near. Just by simply by reading or by hearing the activities of Sita, it has a very positive influence. And we'll know, at least we'll know what the standard is. At least we know what the standard is that we should attempt to achieve.
his friends. With his friends, Ram was a completely, totally loyal.
And of course, Sugriva, and with or with his service to Hanuman, he was totally loyal. Vibhishan, Vibhishan surrendered to him from that point.
Anyone who surrenders to me from that day on, I am in charge of them. I take control. I take charge of their soul. But then, was in dealing with Ravan. Well, sometimes people, they hate somebody so much, right? They hate somebody so much that even there was some recently in modern politics that one politician died. He died some time ago, but still his enemies are criticizing him, saying bad things about him. One of his enemies, you know, I don't mention names, but he's saying bad things about his politician who's dead. What did Ram say after he killed Ravana? He said, enmity ends with death. You had enmity before, now he's dead, it's over. Enmity ends with death. You don't carry that hatred with you. You don't, you know, in some situation or level, after there is a custom in China, also in ancient Germany, that if, suppose, like this recently happened a couple of years ago in North Korea, the uncle of the current leader was branded a traitor. So what did they do? They killed three generations. They killed a man, all his children, all his grandchildren, nephews, nieces, brothers, sisters, everyone, down to three generations. What did Ram do? He installs Vibhishan on the throne. After Vali was killed, you know, he makes his son the crown prince. He only killed only the one person who had enmity with him. That person was killed. Everybody else, there was no enmity. Except, of course, in Lanka, quite a few, up to the time that Ravana was killed, many demons were killed. But after, then there was peace. No retribution, no one going around killing their grandchildren, killing their children, looking for their brothers and sisters and murdering them. Which is what people do today. And one of the biggest lessons, Srila Prabhupada mentioned, and it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the lesson of the Ramayana is that attachment to women is the major cause of distress in this world. Because Ravana was attached to Sita, he was attracted to her. And because Ram was also attached to her, he was in distress, and Ram, and of course, he also was in distress. Everybody was in distress because of his attachments. Because that is what the material world. The material world is all about the attraction of the opposite sexes, and how this is a cause of misery. And we should forget it. You'll get lots of reminders. Yeah. When your children have to get married, or when this happens or that happens, there's lots of reminders about why it's a distress. Now, sometimes in the Ramayana, Kaikeyi and Mantara are put forward as villains, right? How many girls do you know who are named Kaikeyi? Kaushalyas, you know? Some Kaushalyas maybe? You might know some Sumitras, right? But you don't know any Kaikeyis, do you? Nobody named their daughter Kaikeyi because she became notorious. And Buddhist leader Mantara. and Shatrughna came from visiting Bharat's grandfather, and he was dragging, I think it was Mantara he was dragging around, or Kaikeyi he was dragging. One of them, maybe both of them, he was dragging around by the hair, dragging him by the root, and he was going to kill them. And only because he was afraid that Ram would become angry that he didn't execute them. He was so angry at them, furious. He was seething with rage at his mother and her maid. So then, Bharat, with his army, he followed Ram because he wanted to put Ram back on the throne. And then they came to the Bharat, to the ashram, Bharat Ravish, and Bharat Ravish is a disciple of Valmiki. So there, Bharat Ravish, he, first of all, from his own mystic potency, he manifested like 6 or 8 apsaras. And each man in the army was assigned he manifested from his personal body for each man 6 apsaras who would take care of them, you know, give them food, give them massage, everything like that. And they were just totally astounded by his hospitality. And then he could understand from Bharat's demeanor that he was very angry at his mother. And then Bharat reaches, "Don't be upset. Your mother, all of these people, your mother and mother, they are devis from Svargaloka. And this whole thing, this whole exiling of Ram had to take place in order that the mission of the devas could be accomplished. So it's only illegal. Don't take it serious. Otherwise, if Ram doesn't go to the forest, how Ravana will get killed? No, he's not going to get killed if he doesn't go to the forest. So he has to go to the forest somehow. So don't be upset." In this way, Bharat was pacified. So we shouldn't hold a grudge against Kaikeyi and Mantaka, because Ram didn't hold a grudge against Kaikeyi. Ram loved Kaikeyi, even though, you know, whatever happened. Another thing is, did Sita actually need Ram to rescue her? Could Sita have killed Ram? After she thought she was the woman, right? Some crow attacked her when she was fighting. Right? That crow attacked her and Ram had to, you know, do all kinds of things. Sita, a crow hears loud and 10 heads, a big monster. You know, everybody was afraid of her. Was she actually afraid of him? No. She, one time, Ram came to the Ashokavan, and Sita was sitting there. She had changed her clothes, and since she was kidnapped for about 10 months, she was crying, her clothes, she was dirty, her clothes were all torn. You know, wearing the same clothes for 10 months, she probably don't smell good. I mean, it looked good. And he came. And so she was sitting on the ground with her knees up against her breast. And she was holding a blade of grass in front of her. Symbolically, the blade of grass indicated that there was a separation between her and Madhava. Like, if she didn't want that blade, we're not in the same room. But she wanted to indicate that there was a separation between them. And she said, "I could kill you if I wanted to, by my tapasya, by my pratibharata and my tapasya. But I don't want to kill you for 2 reasons. First of all, if I kill you, then I use up my tapasya. And second, it's my husband's duty to kill you, and he will kill you." He will kill you. So it's his duty to kill you, not mine. But I can. And if I were to kill you, then all my tapasya would be used up.
That's why it is said, like I said, we should explain. We said that, have you ever heard this expression that the tapasya is the wealth of the Brahmins? Have you heard this before? Tapasya is the wealth of the Brahmins. So then, I always heard that, but I didn't understand what it meant. But then, when Rama went to the forest and he met with Agastya, Agastya Rishi explained to him what this meant. Oh, there were rishis who were performing tapasya in the forest, and the rakshasas were there. And the rakshasas would attack the rishis, and then they would kill them and eat them alive. And they would eat this, tear them apart and eat them. Now the rishis, they were more than powerful enough to kill the rakshasas by the tejas. But if they used up that power to kill the rakshasas, then they would not be able to promote themselves to higher planets. So for them, they would prefer to be torn apart and eaten alive by rakshasas than use up their tapas, because that was their only wealth. So how dear to them. Like you, somebody's going to start tearing your arms off and your leg up and eating you whole. You might want to do something about it, right? But they thought that that was better than not going to a higher region. That is why tapasya is the wealth of the Brahmins. And why Sita also, she didn't want to. That was one of the reasons she gave for not killing. Most everybody, I would think, is familiar with the Valmiki's Ramayana. Right? So Valmiki's Ramayana is 24,000 shlokas. But there's a lot of other information about Ramayana found in places like the other Puranas, even in Mahabharata. In the Bhagavatam, there's three chapters on the Ramayana, on Ramalila. But from what I've seen, the Padma Purana has got a huge amount of information on Ramalila. The fifth canto of the Ramayana, of the Padma Purana, has a large section about Ramalila, and also conversations between Lord Shiva and Ram. Lots of information is there. In fact, the Padma Purana in the fifth canto, first chapter, verse 15, tells us that descriptions that there's over 100 crore shlokas describing the pastimes of Rama. 100 crore shlokas. That's a 1 billion shlokas. 1 billion. Now, if I had the capacity to chant one sloka in a second, which I don't, but just as an example, just to get an idea, if I could chant one sloka per second, it would take 1,901 years and 104 days to chant those 1 billion shlokas. So that's a lot of information. So you can't even come close to doing justice to describing the pastimes of Ram. 1 billion shlokas. And Madhvacharya in his Mahabharata Pariya Nirnaya says the same thing, that the Mula Ramayana had 1 billion shlokas. But now everything is reduced. So the Padma Purana gives some of the things that are the same, and some of the things are gives extra information about things that happened in the Ramayana. For example, one of the most difficult to understand pastimes which took place in the Ramayana is how could Ram exile Sita while she was 5 months pregnant? Right? That's a hard one for people to understand. How could he do it? Why did he do it? I have this article on my website explaining this. And it's the most popular article people want. Especially near Ramanami, it gets like thousands of hits. People want to, they type in, why did Ram exile Sita? Everybody in India wants to know the answer to that question. Why did he exile Sita? Why did he exile Sita? Well, there's several reasons. There's many reasons which are mentioned. In the Uttara Kanda, the Ramayana is explained that one time, in one of his manifestations, that Vishnu killed the wife of Bhrigumuni. But then he cursed that you also be separated from your wife. And then there is in the Leela with Tulsi Devi that Vishnu, she was married to somebody else. So Vishnu disguises himself as her husband and he kidnaps her. But then she also says that in the future you'll also be separated from your wife by somebody who kidnaps her in disguise. I think he said Hare Bhakti Vilas, there is a quote that because one day Sita forgot to fast on the Kadasi, for that reason, she got exiled. But there's a very long explanation in the Purana about why this happened to Sita. So everybody knows that the background of how, like every good king, Ram had many spies. This is, and the Janaka says that the Brahmin sees through the Shastra. A king sees through his spies. He has spies everywhere. His eyes, for any target, he's got three spies, and the spies don't know about each other. The spies are spying on the spies. In the fourth canto, it describes that Prithu's kingdom ran perfectly because he had a vast espionage network that no one was able to perform any sinful activity because he knew about it. No secret sins. He has spies everywhere. So Ram also had spies. And he sent his spies out everywhere, and they were... So he had six main spies. So five spies, they went out in the evening in Ayodhya. And they were sitting underneath the bedroom windows, and they were listening to the couples. All the couples were engaged in their amorous activities as husband and wife. But though they were engaged in Kama Shastra, they were glorifying Ram, at every stage. And they were just amazed at how the citizens loved Ram so much. I think they were thinking of him at every moment. But then the sixth spy, he went to the section where the shoes were. And he came near the house of the Dobi. And the Dobi was shouting at his wife, I'm not like Ram. I can't accept his wife had been gone for some time. I'm not like Ram. I can't accept a woman who's been at somebody else's house, some other man. You leave like this. So his mother was trying to pacify him. She made a mistake, take her back. And he was done. And he said, no, he wanted to throw her out. His name was Krodha. So Ram God's spy, when he heard this defamation of Ram and Sita, he immediately wanted to kill this Dobi. But then he remembered that Ram said, don't kill any of my citizens. So he didn't, but he wanted to, but Ram said, I shouldn't kill anybody. So he didn't kill anybody. Well, the next morning, Ram wanted to hear the reports of the spies. So the five spies gave their report, but the sixth spy didn't want to give a report. And Ram could tell from his face that something was wrong, because he was very morose, he was very serious, and very upset. But no matter how much prodding he gave, he wouldn't tell, because it was a very, very serious accusation, very serious insults of Ram and Sita. So finally, the other spy said that you should tell him. Even though it shouldn't be said, you should tell him. But then the spy revealed everything he heard, and Ram was devastated at how my reputation is being destroyed. He called for Bharat. He said, Bharat, he asked Bharat, so you choose. Should I commit suicide or should I exile Sita? But Bharat didn't like the choice. Then Ram said, I'll commit suicide. You cut out my head. Either you cut out my head or we should exile Sita. At which point Bharat fainted. He himself fainted. He lost consciousness. So then the next chapter of the Bhagavad Purana explains how this came about. Who this Krodhana was, and why Sita was exiled. So, of course, before she got married, she was a Janaki living in Mithila Desh. She was a young girl. She had her sister Urmila and her girlfriends, and they were playing. And then they saw these two divine parrots, and the parrots were talking, they were singing, talking back and forth. Because that's what parents talk. In fact, in the old days, instead of having a smartphone, you had a parrot. And you, like, Anjali, she would give her messages to the parrot, then the parrot would go fly and repeat the message into the ear of Manganath. And then back and forth. Or Radha and Krishna, they would exchange parrots. They would give messages. And in fact, Chanakya Pandit says that when the king is going to have any secret discussions with his ministers, all parrots must be removed. Parrots must all be removed. Any kind of bird goes, because they repeat what they hear. So these parrots, they were singing about Ram and Sita and all the different activities, with the Ramayana, and she was going, catch those birds. So all her girlfriends, they caught the birds. And she was speaking, oh, beautiful ones. Who are you? And where are you from? And where have you gotten all the stories, So the birds explained, well, we live outside the ashram of Valmiki Muni. And every day, he has all the members, all of the ashram, they're always chanting the Ramayana, because the Ramayana was composed before Ram was even born. But they're always chanting this Ramayana, and since we live, we're just repeating the same thing. So then she gives him more into inquiry, what does Ram do? What does Sita do? And they start answering questions. And she said, well, I am that Sita, and I want to see if that Ram is going to come. So then she took the birds, and she put them in her cage. And then the birds became very distressed, because we're born free, we just live in the trees, we go from one tree to the next tree, She says, we can't stay here, not until waiting for who long is along, before Ram comes, Well, we can't do that. This is a very disturbing force, so they were very disturbed. So she took out the male bird. She said, well, I'll just keep her. Don't worry, I'll take it. Then the female bird became even more distraught. She says, I'm pregnant. You too will be separated from your one when you're pregnant. You too. We said, she kept repeating that. You too will be separated from your one when you're pregnant. And then, out of distress, she died. The female parent died. But because she was chanting the name of Ram every time she said that, she went to Vaikuntha. Her husband, the Shuka and Shari, right? The male is the Shuka and the female is the Shari. The male parent, he was even more disturbed. He was not only was he separated from his wife, but his wife had just died. Because she was, so he became very upset. And he cursed Sita. And he was so upset that he just fainted and he fell into some water and drowned. And in the next life, he was born as a dobi in Ayodhya. So that parrot was the dobi. That is why Sita. Of course, Sita and Rama, they don't have to accept curses. But otherwise, there has to be some way that these leelas go on. So they accept the curses so that, otherwise, if Sita doesn't go to the forest, Rama is not going to get killed. Rama is not going to get killed. It's play. And plus, so one might ask, well, how can parrots talk? First of all, they were described as divine parrots. And second of all, it took place in Treta Yuga, almost a million years ago. And in those yugas, people were described as living 10,000 years long. They had much greater intelligence. Nobody had those little books, they just memorized everything. So if the human beings were that way, what to speak of? Also animals, they would also be on a higher level, not just... And Rami understood that. The monkeys, that of course they were divine, they were the children, they were manifestations of different devas. Now, there's a whole section in the Bhagavad Purana where Lord Shiva, he comes, Shiva and Parvati, they come to Ayodhya in disguise as Brahmins. Brahman and Brahmini. And he goes by the name of Shambhu. Hard to guess that hard to guess that he might be Shiva if he goes by the name Shambhu. Right? Anyway, he comes in the form of Shambhu and just as he arrives, Ram gets a message. A courier, a messenger comes, and Ram reads the message, and he's upset. He just got news that Vibhishan has been captured by some Dravidians, and he's held in chains in a prison. And Ram was upset because Vibhishan is his friend. So he wants to know if it's true. So then, Shambhu, Shiva, explains that there is a method of answering questions by using the Puranas, the Shastras, in a method of divination. He explains the whole process of using Shastras for divination, for answering prashna. I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. My wife told me this. This is a true story. And my wife was very close to her father. He was a devotee. He made her a devotee. He chanted. He was chanting 32 rounds per day. When he became ill, she left the temple in Croatia and she moved to London. And worked at the temple in London and sent money to support her father. Right? So she was very close. She had no mother, she had no relatives, her father was,
She loved her father dearly. Then suddenly, she got news that her father died. You know, no warning, he just died. So she was totally devastated. So she came back from England to Croatia, and there was a funeral, and she was just totally devastated, just crying. You had to hold her up, help her stand up, just like that. And she's wondering in her mind, what happened to my father? Where did my father go? What happened to my father? The person I loved so much. If somebody who you love suddenly died, you also would be concerned, right? You would be wondering, where did they go? Suddenly they were here, now they're gone. Where did they go? So she was with her two cousins, and they had part of her father's ashes. Now they live in a city in Croatia where there was a river, four rivers around the city. So she was pouring some of the ashes in the river, and she was meditating like this, what happened to my father? Where's my father? So she told her cousins that I'm going to take the Bhagavad Gita, I'm going to ask Krishna, what happened to my father? Where is my father now? So she just closed her eyes, and then she just stuck her finger in the Gita and read the verse. Now, the verse that came up was 7:18, Bhagavad Gita 7:18. So she's like, I want to know what happened to my father. He was a devotee. What happened to my father? So then she stuck her finger in and she got to verse 7:18. Then she read it to her cousins, who were not devotees. And this is what Krishna said. Because she asked Krishna, what happened to my father? Where is my father? My beloved father. So Krishna replied, all these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect Guru. When she read that, she was totally pacified. And her cousins were just like, they were astonished. they were by way of pious Christians. And they were astonished by this. And when they went home, they asked my wife to repeat this to their mother, who was her father's sister. So she repeated the whole story. And then they all wanted copies of the Gita. They were so amazed, they were so impressed that Krishna answers you through the Gita when you have a question like that. So that's what I mean when I say that you can use the shastras for divination. So Ram had a question, like, is Vibhishan in prison? Is this true? But then Shambhu, Shri Shiva, he, using this master of divination, he selected three shlokas, somehow, from the Skanda Purana, and he said that yes, it's true. He is in chains, but soon he'll be free. Soon he'll be free. But then Ram went with his entourage to Sri Lanka. And they asked around. And they determined that Vibhishan was in some village. And he was thrown in the basement. He was underground and he was bound in chains. And the reason was that he had killed the Ram by accident. They figured it was by accident. So they, since it was accidental, wasn't on purpose, he said that some pious chitta should be there. He gave away 360 cows to everybody, and everybody was happy because it was only an accident, like that. So this kind of interesting things happen like that. So he showed us how to use. And Lord Shambhu says that the best shastras to use are like the
Skanda Purana, but also in Mahabharata and Ramayana. Some people use it, depending on the different person, they'll use different shastras. Skanda Purana, because it's a very large Purana, very, very large. Skanda Purana is the largest, Skanda is the next largest, and of course Mahabharata is the biggest. In this world, the Mahabharata is 1 lakh shlokas long. In Pitri Loka, the Mahabharata is 13 lakhs long. And in Gandharva Loka, Mahabharata is 14 lakhs long. Whereas in Swarga, Mahabharata is 30 lakhs. So we have the children's version, only 1 lakh. But if you know how to do it, then you can use it to answer questions. Yeah, I gave you an example. So now, there's an interesting, toward the end of the fifth canto of the Pada Purana, chapter 116, Ram is sitting there and he says, I want to hear some story glorifying my exploits, or talking about the killing of demons. Then he said, but there's some Brahmin going around saying that Raja was killed before Kumbhakarna. How can this be? He's spreading godlessness. Should he be honored or should he be dishonored? He says like this, because he knew. Because he killed both of them. He killed Kumbhakarna and he killed Raja. But Kumbhakarna was killed first, then Raja. But this person is saying Bhagavan was killed first, then Kumbhakarna. And Jambavata tells him, actually, what he said is true, but it's from a different kalpa. He's repeating the Ramayana, not Nikki's Ramayana, but the Ramayana of a different kalpa. Does everybody know what a kalpa is? What is a kalpa? No.
43 lakh, one
year
of Brahma.
No.
These are 4 yugas
put together. No. He said it's a yuga. He said it was a year of Brahma. He said it was 4 yugas put together.
A day of Brahma.
Huh?
A day of Brahma.
He is right. A day of Brahma. He gets it. Okay, we have some prize for him. He is correct. 1 second of Lord Brahma is 100,000 years for us. Remember that. So that means for Lord Brahma, our Kali Yuga is 4.32 seconds long. Not very long. It's gone. So this is the. So there's a. His time scale is very big. So one. He has 4 yugas, that's a Mahayuga. 1,000 Mahayugas is 1 day of Lord Brahma. That's 4,320,000,000 years. And life is equivalent. But that's considered a kalpa, 1 day of Lord Brahma. He has 360 days in his year, and he lives for 100 years. So, this is the Dvitiya Pararbha. This is the second half. Currently, we are in the second half of Lord Brahma's day of life. Yesterday was his 50th birthday. Today is the day after his 50th birthday. It's the 6 manvantaras that have gone by. So manvantara, should speak about what is a manvantara? Manvantara is the kalpa divided by 14. If you divide Lord Brahma's day into 14 parts, you have a manvantara. That's the approximately like 280 million years. So Indra lives for a manvantara. The devas rule for a manvantara with every, and manu, there's a manu for every manvantara. There's a whole set of devas. Now the lifespan of Indra sounds like a very long time for us, right? 300 million years. But for Lord Brahma, it's 51 minutes. That's like sort of like a class at college. Class at college is about the length of that time. That's the lifespan of Lord of Indra from the viewpoint of Lord Brahma. So we're in the 6
manvantaras have gone by. It's the 28th Mahayuga. So, from Lord Brahma's perspective, it's the day after his 50th birthday, and in about 20 minutes, it will be time for lunch. It's about 11:40 in the morning for Lord Brahma, and in 20 minutes of his time, it's going to be time to do Sandhya-Vandana, and then he will have lunch. For us, it will be 120 million years. So now you can imagine that every day we have lunch every day, right? Our breakfast every day. For years. We have breakfast every day, right? Who hasn't had every day we have breakfast? Now, if your mother, especially in South India, it's going to be the same, right? You can have at least, you can have some chutney, some sambar, maybe some dosa, maybe some uttapam. Now, is it going to be exactly the same? Exactly? Will it be exactly the same? No. Maybe one day there's going to be some pumpkin in the sambar. Maybe one day it'll be aloo. Maybe it'll be tomato. Maybe there'll be more herb dal in the Italy than normal. There's going to be some variation. You could say it was breakfast. You could recognize it, oh, it's breakfast. But it may not be exact. It's not going to be exactly the same. So, as Krishna says in Gita, that, he comes at different ages. So it's not just that the Das Avatar was and that's it. But Krishna comes once in the day of Brahma. So the other avatars, he comes also at different times, not just once. So Ram came not just once, many times before. Even for example, Varaha Dev. In the Bhagavatam itself, it speaks of the Rakta Varaha and the Svaita Varaha, and there's the Yajna Varaha. At least four different Varaha Devas are spoken about. So Ram came before. In fact, one time, does anybody know So I think in 1981 somebody was explaining to me, telling me one story about how Sita was trying to convince Ram that let me go to the forest. And also, I want to go to the forest with you. And Ram was saying, no, you can't go to the forest. And Sita was saying, I want to go. And was fighting back and forth. Finally, Sita said to Ram, says, listen, if you don't let me go to the forest, you'll be the first Ram who didn't let Sita go to the forest. he was defeated by Raja. So this is not the first time that there was Ram Leela. Not the first. So Jambavan explains to Ram this, he's speaking about a Ramayana at a different time, at a different kalpa. And though it's very similar, there are some noticeable differences. It's a condensation. It's about 300 shlokas, so you can. But it gives some interesting things. For example, in this other Ramayana, Dasara was going to war and against his own king. And he was very much impressed by the king's son. Right? What was the name of the king's son here? Okay. So he went to war with Maharaj Satya, and the king's son was named Bhushana. Kshatriya is merciless. Once you're at war, you fight to the death, whether it's your father, whether it's your son. So whose idea?
Who did this? Where did this come from?
Uh-huh.
We're not going to stop at the list. So he was very much impressed when he saw the son of the king, his name was Bhushan, and he began, by seeing all his good qualities, he began remembering his own son, who had been killed and eaten by a bear. That means Ram had a brother. In this case, the Dasharatha had previously had a son who was killed. So he captured this king and prince, and he asked the king, how did you get such a wonderful son? So the king explains to him the whole procedure, and Dasharatha does his procedure. Now, in Valmiki's Ramayana, Dasharatha has three wives, right? Kaushalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. But this Dasharatha has got four wives, Kaushalya and Sumitra, but two other wives, Surupa and Subhasha, and they're the ones. Of course, Kaushalya has Ram, Lakshmana from Sumitra, Bhara from Surupa, and Shatrughna has Suvesha. Vishvamitra, in Valmiki's Ramayana, Vishvamitra is very prominent. He's the one who asks Dasharatha to loan him Lakshmana and Ram to go kill Taraka. There's no Taraka in his other Ramayana. There's no Vishvamitra. But Vashishta, he hears about this princess, Janaki, and that she's just a perfect match for Ram. So they go to Mithila, and Janaka wants his daughter to marry Ram. But the problem is that it's Swayamvara. Right, the Swayamvara. So all these other kings and princes are coming. So how to arrange it so that she marries Ram? So he invokes Lord Shiva. Now this is one of the other features of this Ramayana, is that practically Ram is like a Shiva Vaka. Unusual, you'll see. He's always worshipping Shiva. So anyway, the Lord Shiva is invoked, and he gives him this bow. He says, use this bow, and only the person who can string the bow, he can marry Janaki. And of course, that's the same as in the other Ramayana. Then there's a debate between Narada and Garga Rishi over choosing the auspicious time of the marriage. And Garga Rishi, his method was that you avoid bad times. And Narada said, well, no, you should choose a good time, not just that you avoid bad times. But then it was decided, well, in our area, we choose marriages by avoiding the bad times, not by choosing the good times. So that's why they decided to get married. There's no mention of Mantara. And many of the events which took place in the forest were the same as in Valmiki's Ramayana. Now, one of the in Valmiki's Ramayana, there's a huge, long search. The different what parties of monkeys are getting sent to the west, some are sent to the north, some are to the east, and then one group is sent to the south, and that's where they find out that Sita is in Lanka. But in this Ramayana, Sugriva tells them immediately that they're in Lanka. Everybody immediately goes to Lanka. Everybody immediately goes south. No searching around. Now, one of the major differences in this Ramayana is that in the Valmiki Ramayana, how do they reach Lanka?
By what?
And they write Ram's name on stones, and then they put the stones in the water, and the stones float. That's not how it happens in his other Ramayana. In the other Ramayana, Ram invokes Lord Shiva, and he says, "Okay, I have this problem. I have like so many monkeys, and Lanka is over there, and we're over here. How do we get there?" So Lord Shiva, again, he gives his bow. The bow expands into a gigantic form. Everybody gets onto the bow, and then they go to Lanka. That's how it is other than my hand. They go to Lanka that way. Now, if anybody's read Valmiki Ramayana, you know that practically the most powerful soldier on Ravana's side was not Ravana, but Indrajit. He was the most terrible, ferocious fighter. You know, Ravana only came out at the end. But Indrajit was the most powerful and ferocious fighter. But in this Ramayana, he gets killed right away. He gets knocked out of the sky by some monkeys, and then Lakshman kills him at the beginning. No problem. He's like a total pushover. And in the Valmiki Ramayana, Vibhishan joins near the beginning. Right at the very beginning, even before fighting starts, Vibhishan comes. In this Ramayana, Vibhishan doesn't join the war until much later. He only changes sides after Ravana has been seriously wounded. And it was Vibhishan who reveals to Ram how to kill Ravana, whereas that's not what happens, you know. And Kumbhakarna is killed after Ravana dies. So it's a very, though it's similar, there's a lot of differences. So it's like a very different breakfast. You know, so this morning we're going to have North Indian style. So now, there are many connections between Ram Lila and Krishna Lila. Can anybody think of the connections between Ram Lila and Krishna Lila? Who?
They are previous life.
Okay, that's true. Danta Bhakti.
Yeah, they were the giant pinja.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other?
Kshatriya.
Hmm?
Family of Kshatriya.
Now a little bit more specific, you know. I'll give you some examples and then you see if you can think of anything else. So in the Ramayana, when Ram goes to the Dandakaranya, the many rishis were living there. And they were all told this up together. They saw how beautiful Lord Ram was, that they desired in their minds that they wanted to marry Lord Ram. So what happened? In the next lifetime, they took birth in Krishna Lila and they became gopis. And they married Krishna. So they are like the Rishikanas. That's what I mean, the connection. Another connection, Jambavan. Jambavan is in both Ramalila and in Krishna Lila, and that his daughter married Krishna, Jambavati. So he was a general in Ram's army, and also in the father-in-law of Krishna, and Krishna Lila. Another one, when Ram left to go back to where he sent all the everybody to Ayodhya down to the spiritual world, he had five people remain. He told five to stay back. Who were they? Anybody remember?
Jambavan, Hanuman.
Who?
Hanuman, Jambavan.
Vibhishan, Mahinda, and Dvidvita. They stayed back. He told them to stay back. So, Dvidvita, he and Mahinda were manifestation of the Ashwini Kumars. But when Dvidvita, when he saw Lakshman, Lakshman was struck by an error when he was, on the verge of death. In his mind, he developed doubts about Lakshman, about the divinity of Lakshman. So then, because of that error of thinking, he developed very bad association. And in Krishna Lila, he was a demon. So he was a great hero in Rama Lila, but he is a demon. And he's killed by Balaram. Another thing is Mathura. Krishna was born in Mathura. But who founded Mathura? Who is the founder of Mathura? Shatrughna. Shatrughna is the founder of Mathura. And of course, when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, who heard the Bhagavad Gita? Correct. Hanuman. He heard the Bhagavad Gita, along with Arjuna. Why?
He was there as
Kapigwaja. He was, so Hanuman was on the battlefield also, with Arjuna and Krishna. And he also heard the Bhagavad Gita. And of course, Hanuman is the brother of Bhima. So now, so anybody else get any other that you can think of connection between the two Vedas?
Monkeys in the pastime of Krishna eating.
Yeah, well, more specific than that.
Gobi came back again. He was killed by Krishna. Uh-huh. Gobi. Same Gobi came again.
Now, sometimes, actually, there is a group of people, for example, the Ramakrishna mission, who claim that actually Rama is not God, and that the parts of the Ramayana, like the Balakanda and the Uttarakanda, they were added on later to make it look like Rama is God, but actually they say Rama is not God. They give so many reasons, and people who are atheists, they believe this. They say it's just a native story to make it look like Ram is God. But this is not true. There is, if you look in the other chapters of the Ramayana, there are many references, this explains to you the case you ever hear this argument that says that Rama is not God and that these are just added on later. There are several references which show that this is not true. In the, if you look at the Gita presentation, in the Yudhakanda, Ravana's grandfather, Malayavan, describes that Ram is Vishnu in the human form. And in the Yudhakanda 1546, when asked by Rama who he is, Garuda says, "I'm your beloved friend." So who is, Garuda is the friend of Vishnu. Which clearly indicates that he's in Vishnu. In the Yudhakanda, that Lakshman remembers he is that Amsha of Vishnu. And then also in the Yudhakanda, Ravana admits that Ram is Narayan. And in several places, it says, and even Mandodara explains to Ravana that Ravana was killed by Vishnu. So these atheists or self-atheists, that they're always trying to minimize Shastra. In fact, there are many versions of the Ramayana. There's one called the Mantra Ramayana. Mantra Ramayana was authored by one Pandit. What he did, he scoured the Vedas, and he took out different mantras from the Vedas, and he reorganized them, and it tells the Ramayana. That's why it's called the Mantra Ramayana, directly from the Veda. So it's not some man-made story like that. Now, I'm sure everybody has heard, and I already mentioned it, that they say that in some versions of the Ramayana that Ram worshipped Shiva, right, in order to get permission to kill Ravana. Everybody's heard that story. Or even I just mentioned how in the previous kalpa, there's many references that Ram is invoking Shiva, he's worshipping Shiva, he appears to be a Shiva Bhakta, actively speaking. So how can this be? He's Vishnu. So this, I was also wondering this, it's kind of confusing, because specifically since the Bhagavad Purana is one of the Sattvika Puranas which are mentioned for devotees. But then it's explained. So I was reading, continuing reading in the Bhagavad Purana. In the sixth canto, chapter 235, is the secret teachings of Shiva to Parvati. So, in this chapter, Parvati asks Shiva, how can you tell who a heretic is? Who are the heretics? Because we should know who heretics are. Because it says in the Shastra that if you associate with heretics, you lose all your punya and you go to hell. And that. So I want to know who a heretic is so I can avoid them. But then Shiva explains, well, heretics, they smear their bodies with ashes and they have skulls, and they say that Vishnu is equal to Shiva. And then he grew up his whole description, and then Parvati says, don't mind my saying this, but you just described yourself. And he said, I have a secret to tell you. Actually, what happened was that in the past, asuras were worshipping Vishnu to get power, and they were creating difficulty for the demigods. So Vishnu asked me to create these heretical doctrines so that it would confuse the asuras, so that Vishnu himself would worship, that even Vishnu himself would worship just choose to be a source. And that is why, you know, and he even explains how he created the various scriptures, how he created the Mahavaya Vasha, how he creates that Vedavada, like that. And even Vishnu himself will worship him just to confuse the asuras. So there are many, so that's why this is the secret teachings of Shiva to Parvati. Because she's wondering, well, here my husband is an Arabic. But there are certain pastimes like that, which Krishna does just to confuse atheists. For example, you know, in the Gita, in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna is this Parthasarathi, right? And he's standing in front of Arjuna. And all these warriors are shooting arrows that are going through Krishna's body, and, you know, blood is, you know, it appears to be blood. He's being shot by so many thousands and thousands of arrows. And then at the end of the war, Krishna tells Arjuna, you get off the chariot. And then after Arjuna has the safety, Krishna steps off the chariot explodes. The chariot totally explodes. And he explains to Arjuna, well, I absorbed all the astras that were coming. So yet, how does Krishna appear to leave his body? A hunter shoots him in the foot. How is this possible? He is attacked and by something Mahabharatis and Antiratis and Astras and nothing happened, but some hunter shoots him in the foot and he dies. This is meant to confuse atheists. So we have to always remember that Krishna is, but those who are devotees, they're not confused. Why? Because they shan satata yuktana bhajata kriti purvaka. To those who worship with great faith and devotion, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. They won't get confused. They won't be bewildered. But that's definitely the case, that whatever you see in Shastras, you know, Puranas, that you see Vishnu or Ram or Krishna worshipping Shiva, is to confuse atheists. Because you see, not all Shaivites are demons, but all demons are Shaivites. Isn't it? Sort of like, not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslims. Now, how should we read the Ramayana? How should we study the Ramayana? What faith, what consciousness should we have when we read the Ramayana? The perfect example of this, of how we should study the Ramayana, is seen in the life of King Kulashekar, Raj Kulashekar. Everybody knows who Raj Kulashekar was? He's one of the Alwars. He's wrote the Mukunda Balastotra. Srila Prabhupada was very fond of Mukunda Balastotra. So Raj Kulashekar, he was the king of Travancore. And he gathered so many pandits around him, and they milked all the shastras, and that's when they came up with this Mukunda Balastotra. So he chose for his daily reading, the Ramayana. And every day, the Raj Guru would read the Ramayana to him. So then one day, the king was listening, and the Raj Guru explained how that now Ram was alone, and he had to fight with Kari Bhushana. Ram against an army of 14,000 Rakshasas. So Raj Kulashekar said, "Well, my Ram has to fight alone. I am here. I have my army. I'm not going to fight alone.
So he got all his army together. He got everybody. You know, mobilization. His army, right? We're going, heading north. You know, so his ministers were. Our king is great. The ministers were very upset. They were, he's taking this too seriously. It's just a story. You know, like they're thinking like that. So they, what to do? The king is heading north with his whole army. The fight, you know. So then, what they thought? Well, we'll send somebody ahead and come back, and they should say that that the battle is already over and that Ram already defeated the Rakshasas and everything is okay. So as Rajkulashekhar was heading north with his army, they meet these people and they tell him the lie, and that, you know, so then he's pacified. And he comes and turns around with his army and goes back home. So the Raja Guru could see that the king took this very seriously. So he would read Ramayana and he'd read everything, and he'd speak more about the happy things, but he just sort of skim over the sad things. Because he could see the king would get very upset. So then one day, the Raja Guru was not able to read, he was sick or something. And so the son of the Guru was reading. He didn't know what his father was doing. And his father was, editing what he was editing the Ramayana too. So then he came to the part and he starts describing how Sita's kidnapped, how she's in Lanka, and how there's a war going on. This and so then Rajkula, of course, I should mention that the family deities of the king is also Ram on his altar, is Sita, Ram, and Lakshmana. So he's thinking, how is this possible? And now we're at the Ram is fighting with just monkeys, only just monkeys, and not here with an army. And of course, everybody knows Trivandrum is right next door to the ocean. So then he gets his army and he just heads out to the ocean. And he's up to his waist in water. And the ministers don't know what to do. So at this point, Sita, Ram, Lakshmana on the altar are thinking, well, now we have to do something. Because a devotee, he's going to drown. So then, Sita and Ram, they start walking on the ocean towards the shore. And Ram is carrying Sita. And he picks up Kulashekhar, and don't worry, we won the battle, everything is okay. And and he brings Kulashekhar in for that. So that is how we should, these are not stories. These are the actual eternal pastimes of the Lord. And by meditating so deeply like that, Kulashekhar got his reward. Just like in the Bhaktivinoda Gita Sindhu, it describes the pastime of one Brahmin who was very poor, but he wanted to worship the deities with all royal paraphernalia. Then he was in a Bhagavatam class and he heard that you can worship the Lord mind. So that's what he did. He went to a solitary place and he began to offer a super opulent worship to the Lord with gold and jewels and very elaborate puja. And he was making some kheer, some payasam, and the payasam in his mind, the payasam was very hot. So then with his finger, he touched the payasam, and it burned his finger, and it broke his meditation, and when he looked at his finger was burned. So in Vaikuntha, Narayan starts smiling, and Lakshmi asks, what are you smiling about? He said, then Vishnu, Narayan explains, as Prabhupada's devotee is meditated. He sent his Vishnudutas, the Vimana, to come and collect him because he's meditating so deeply on me. Because if you're thinking about Krishna, Krishna is thinking about you. You're thinking about Krishna, then Krishna is thinking about you. Don't forget. It's not that we're thinking about Krishna and Krishna is thinking about somebody else. He's thinking about you. Because he's in your heart. And as soon as you stop thinking about Krishna,
then Krishna is not thinking about you.
So if you want Krishna to think about you, you should think about him. So, I forgot to ask to send out some papers. Does everybody have any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? Complaints? Criticisms? Jai Shri Ram. Hare Krishna.